Okay, good morning, everybody. First of all, thank you very much. Thank you for the mazel tov and the good wishes. Baruch Hashem, the wedding was really wonderful. We're obviously in Sheva Brochas mode a little bit. I'd like to apologize. I've got a bit of a sore throat and a little bit under the weather, but hopefully the voice will manage through the hour. I'm very excited to announce that we have two sponsorships for today's shiur. The shiur is sponsored in memory of the yahrzeit of Jacob Berlinger. Berlinger, Yaakov ben Naftali zichron libracha, and Miriam Berlinger, Miriam bat Menachem alei shalom, by the Berlinger and Treisman family. Shmuel is one of our regular recorders here, and his shiur, the recording of the shiur, goes out to many, many people, so thank you very much to him. And again, it's sponsored by those families, the Berlinger and the Treisman family, their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren. I'm also very pleased to announce that the shiur is sponsored today by Stanley and Donna Dalnikov, in honor of the marriage of Asher and Leah, our son and our new daughter-in-law. Stanley and Donna are, they know Leah from back in America and the New Haven community, and they were instrumental in encouraging the young couple to connect with each other and remain and grow in their love together. So thank you to them. And thank you for the sponsorship to everybody. It's lovely to have everybody here. So, as you know, we are in the middle of a series of three issues dealing with halacha and hashkofa and the way they intertwine. And we talked about what is hashkofa 2 weeks ago, and we talked about is there a sack in hashkofa last week. And I'd like to conclude with a third one next week, which is going to be the issue of do we in fact learn halacha from Midrashim, which is actually a fascinating topic. It's going to take us all around on a grand tour of different Midrashic areas, Minhagim, Halachas, and we're going to deal with that next week, and then we'll move on to a new topic. But I'd like to interrupt, as pre-announced, in this particular session, to deal with something, L'chvod HaChatan V'Hakala, which is the issue, rather hot-button issue, of egalitarian weddings. Now, anyone who was at our chuppah, I hope we'll have realized it was not an egalitarian wedding. It was a pretty standard wedding, although there were a few little nuances here and there that were done. The Kala and Chatan both shared the Shechianu under the chuppah. We'll talk about that soon. I can already see some strange faces, like some people with some cringes. We'll talk about that in a minute. That's not so controversial. A few other things as well. But we'll talk about a few issues today. I would like to talk about four specific issues and then generally a couple of other points at the end. The wedding, a traditional Orthodox halachic wedding, is a fairly male-oriented affair. The man clearly takes the proactive role. The kala accepts the ring, and of course, tacitly agrees to the marriage, but she really gives nothing to the chatan, and she says nothing to the chatan. All the officiants are usually men, all the witnesses are usually men, and hopefully men, because if the witnesses are not men, we've got a big problem, we'll see soon, and usually all the speakers are men as well. Many people have no problem with any of this, and there's no reason why they should have a specific problem, but some couples do want some more female involvement, and that's perfectly understandable as well. And the question is, to what extent is a more proactive female role in the chuppah permitted by halacha and legitimate within an authentic, whatever authentic means, traditional, whatever traditional means, framework, rooted in Masorah, whatever Masorah means. And you can see there's going to be a lot of issues which are not entirely clear. I'd like to talk about four specific things. I'd like to talk about a double ring ceremony, which is something that a number of people want to push for. He gives her a ring. Why can't she give him a ring? They both wear a ring. Isn't that beautiful? Let's talk about women saying Sheva Brochas, either under the chuppah or at the meal. And let's talk about women reading the ksubah. The truth is that of all of those things that I've mentioned, probably the only one which has really come up in weddings that you've probably been to, at least Orthodox weddings, is women reading the ksubah. I doubt that you've been at a wedding which had a double ring ceremony, which was an Orthodox wedding. And I doubt that you've heard women saying the Sheva Brochas under the chuppah, but let's look at why. If you have, then we'll talk about that, and if you have not, let's look at why not. So let's start with the easier ones. A double ring ceremony, which is understandable. He gives her a ring, she wants to give him a ring, and let's leave aside the question of whether it's permitted for a man to wear a wedding ring. just after the wedding. Let's assume for the purposes of today's discussion that it is permitted in terms of Lo Silbash, the issue of Beged Isha, for a man to wear a ring. And I think we talked about Beged Isha in this forum before. If it is the custom for men to wear men's rings, then there's nothing wrong with a man wearing a man's ring, whatever a man's ring is. So let's assume that's fine. And many Choshiva Talmidei Chachamim have worn wedding rings. Let's assume that's fine. The question is, she wants to give him the ring, just like he gives her the ring. So let's start at the very beginning. Number one, Ki yikach ish isha ubala. The pasuk says when a man marries a woman, when a man yikach, takes, whatever takes mean. Now, takes is not a very good translation. It sounds like someone sort of slinging the bride over his shoulder and marching off into the distance on a horse, or riding on a horse or something like that. No one's taking physically anybody. And yikach usually doesn't mean physically taking somebody. It means persuading somebody to do something. Ki yikach ish isha. So the man is the person at the center of the pasuk. And the Gemara asks, well, what kind of permutations and combinations can we have here? Let's look at number two. Talking about the kiddushin, the first part of the wedding ceremony, the erusin or kiddushin. Tana Rabbana. So the Gemara says, ketsad bekesef. How does a man be makadish? How can a man be makadish a woman through kesef? So these are the options. Nothing like kesef. He gives her some money, or shavi kesef, or something worth amount of money, and of course the minhag today is to have a ring. He could give her a can of Coke, he could give her any number of things, a big fluffy bear, but the minhag is to give her a ring. The Amalai, he says to her, Hari at Mekudeshet Li, or Hari at Mu'ureset Li, or Hari at Li Le'intu, you should be my wife. If he says any of those things, Hari Zoh Mekudeshet. This works. Very good. Aval he, shenachna v'amra he, but if she gives him a ring, and she says, Hareini mekudeshet lach, I am betrothed to you. Hareini mu'ureset lach, and it could be lach rather than lacha, because lach in Aramaic is used for the masculine as well. Hareini lach leintu, I am your wife. If she says any of these things, ain't no mekudeshet. That doesn't work. She gives him a ring, and she says, I'm married to you. Forget about it. She says to him, you're married to me. That for sure doesn't work. But even if she says, I'm married to you, it doesn't work. Now, Natan Huva Amarhi, if he gives and he says, Pshita, to have a kiddushin. That's clearly fine. He says, he gives. Natan Huva Amarhi. The question is, what if he gives the ring, but she does the little speech? He gives her the ring, and she says, Yashakayach, I am now married to you. What's the deal with that? So the Gemara first says, Nasa Kimisha Nasnehiva Amrihi. That doesn't work. It's like she gave and she said. Why the Kiddushin? It doesn't work at all. And then maybe the Gemara says afterwards, maybe it's a suffix, and a drabona with chayshesh for a Kiddushin, meaning it's not the way to do it, but maybe we're worried that maybe the Kiddushin looks like a Kiddushin. But the Gemara is very, very clear that if she gives, or she says, or both, it doesn't work. He has to do both. Now, why is that? Why does he have to do both? So the Ran explains in number three. Alakemisha Torah Amra. Since the Torah said, Ki yikach ish isha, the Torah is very explicit. A man has to do the maisa. A man has to be proactive. The Lai Amra, the Torah never said, Ki tilakach isha leish. It doesn't say if a woman is taken by a man, is married by a man. The Lai Kalimene Shitachnis Asma L'Rishus Abal. She has no power in Halacha to put herself into the ambit, if you like, of the husband. She has no ability to make that status change. Obviously, it goes without saying, nobody's buying anybody else under the chuppah, because nobody can sell anybody afterwards. You know, that's not how it works. There is a status change. There is a kinyan which is a status change. She has no ability to make that status change. And that's why the Gemara says to the Ram, the E Amrahi, if she says, Hareini mu'ureset lach, I am married to you, ein b'divareha mamash, it doesn't do anything. She agrees tacitly to his kiddushin. She basically is allowing herself, making herself open for him to marry her. She's effectively allowing him to connect with her almost as in a hefka way. And then the Baal takes her into his rishus. The husband takes her into his rishus. Hilchach ein anu danim b'kiddushin mitzad ha'isha ela mitzad habal. And therefore there is no question that if she tries to give a ring, it doesn't do anything. Now, in which case, why don't we just have a double ring ceremony and say the following? Let the chatan give a ring to the kala, say, Hari at mekudeshetli, the tabat zo, by the way, it's not zu, it's zo, okay, kadat Moshe v'Yisrael, and good, mekudeshet, they're married. So now they're married, then she can give him a ring afterwards. They're no less married than they would have been if he hadn't given her the ring. They're married, they're married, it's a done deal. So what if she gives him a ring and says, I give you a ring as well? Why is that a problem? So let's have a look. The truth is, it shouldn't be a problem in theory, although we see it is a problem, because once he's done it, there is no going back. Okay? I told my son this very clearly. Okay? Because there is a principle in halacha that if you change your mind, you can always go back toch kidei dibur. What's toch kidei dibur? The time it takes to say shalom aleichem or shalom aleichem Rebbe, you can always change your mind. Have a look here, number four. The Hilchos, the Gemara in Arim says, the halacha is toch kidei dibur kidibur dami. Within a couple of seconds is considered you're still in the middle of it. Chutz, apart from a few things. Megadeh, somebody who, God forbid, curses Hashem's name. The Oved Avodas Kochavim, or somebody who makes a declaration of Avodah Zorah, of idolatry. Umekadesh, and somebody who does a Kiddushin. Umegaresh, and somebody who does a Gittin. Somebody who gives a get. There is no going back. Why not? Over the page, and look at the Ran again, number 5. The Nirbeinai, I think the reason why you can't go back is the Bashar Mili, when it comes to buying, a washing machine at Walmart. Yeah? The Loich Amiri Kulahai, it's not such a big deal, says the Ran. You buy it, you don't buy it, you take it back, you change it for another one. Kisha'adam Oysa Oysam, when a person does such a thing, makes such a kinyan, Loi Begmar Dasa Hi Haya Oysa. You're never quite sure. You're never quite 100% there as you're doing it. You're always thinking at the back of your mind. Some people are chronically indecisive like that. You know, they're buying something. They're saying, should I be buying this or shouldn't I be buying this? I used to be very indecisive, but I'm not quite so sure anymore. He's always thinking, or she's always thinking, I'm buying this, but maybe I'll change my mind. And they always want to reserve for themselves the right to say, actually, no, I've changed my mind. I don't want it now. That's why it works. You can always reverse it. Aval hani, these things though, kaven de chamira kulahai, since they are so important, ein adam oisa oisan ale b'haskama gemura. Nobody says hari at mekudeshetli unless they really mean it. They've got a long time to think about it beforehand, and a lot of money has been invested in it, okay? And therefore they don't say unless they mean it. Umishum hachi chazara afiru tov kedei dibur loy mehani. And therefore there is no going back. Which should make it easy for us. Therefore, he says, Hari Amakudeshetli, there is no going back. Everyone's happy. Makudeshet, the band plays. So why can't she give him a ring? Let her give him a ring. They're no less married. They're married. There's no going back. So Rav Moshe has at least 3 tshuvas, actually 4 tshuvas that deal with this, and I'm going to bring you a little excerpt from 3 of them. Rav Moshe Feinstein, and this is the guiding fact for really all Masadri Kiddushin, and even on the very left wing of the quote-unquote open Orthodox world, this is the tshuva which is really quoted and followed, as far as I've seen anyway. Rav Moshe is very unhappy with a double ring ceremony, and he gives a few reasons. Let's look at his reasons for being unhappy. Look at number 6. These situations where after the chatan has given the ring, has been mekadesh b'tabat, b'takala, she gives him a ring. She says, I am married to you. Or Atam Mekudashli. Or she's even more of a feminist and she says, forget about it, you're actually married to me. I'm taking you. The Rav Moshe first of all says, for sure, as far as Kiddushin is concerned, once he gave the ring to her and it was a done deal, hen Kiddushin Gemurin. It's their marriage. Umashigam haya nitna natna vagam amra, the fact that she gave and she said Masha Amra, what she said, Haim Divri Hebel Vashtus. That's just a load of nonsense, he says. Okay? Halachically at least. Let's not say that the love between them is a load of nonsense, but halachically is, you know, it doesn't do any harm in theory. But about Asur La Sotse. But it's completely prohibited. Loimiboy minaga nochrim, who, if this is the minag of the non-Jews to do this, where he gives and she gives, that's already chokatagoy. Kenshi who isamidoraisa. Afiru ima eno chokla avodazor. Even if it's not avodazorah, it's chokatagoy. Alachok hevel vashtus, and when we had a shir on Thanksgiving, we talked about the parameters of chokat hagoy. and under what circumstances the Torah prohibits following the ways of the non-Jews. And the Ramah there says that if it doesn't have a rational, logical stance to it, then it's called Chukatagoya. You could argue that this has a rational stance, because the reason she's giving it is she loves him and he loves her, etc. But the Ramah says it could be Chukatagoya. The Kalsha came possession who negate Dina Torah. But all the more so because the problem is, not just Chukatagoya, but this actually undermines the Dina of the Torah. Because under non-Jewish rules, I don't exactly know the canon law of Catholicism or the Christian law. If he says, you know, when the bishop or the priest says, do you take this man to be your lawful wedded husband? Does she have to say, I do? I assume she has to say, I do. Okay? If she says, actually, I'm not so sure anymore, it's all over. So says Rav Moshe, she has to agree. In the next ceremony, she has to agree. The third line. The chay b'shata chupa af b'loy amira. Uba amira af achakach. And what if she says afterwards, im hu samach l'chupa? I'm not happy, he says. If she says anything under the chupa, if she says something straight after the chupa, I'm not happy with this. The yesh lidmod lezeh. And he gives a very interesting example. You can compare this. What's this issue? Very interesting sushdel, a comparison. There's a din in mikveh. So if you go to the mikveh, are you allowed to take a shower? A man who goes to the mikveh, let's say. Are you allowed to take a shower after the mikveh? Well, you might say it's highly advisable to take a shower after the mikveh. Okay, that's a different story. But are you allowed to take a shower? So the Chazal said, under certain circumstances, it's prohibited to take a shower after you use the mikveh. So Amar Rabbi Amar Rabbatim, on the fourth line and second paragraph, Shehu Mishum the Betchila Hayu Toivim B'mei Ma'arois Mechunasim V'Seruchim. They used to go to mikvehs in a mayan or a pond or whatever, or a rather smelly lake, whatever, and it was a not particularly pleasant experience. Okay, they would go in this smelly lake, but how you nice in Malayim, my children, and then they would take a shower afterwards to wash off the algae or whatever it was that was on them. Lahavi hasirachon, to take off the stink. Of course they did. When we call Markham Bam is there, what happened is people started saying, Sha'amru loy elumatarin el eimatarin. People said, it's not the lake that gives you the tahara, because how can you get tahara in a smelly lake? It's the shower that makes you tahara. That does the trick. And people started saying that. Even though people knew, if you spoke to the people who knew what they were talking about, they'd say, no, of course, the shower was just to take away the smell. The kalsha ken hacha, so this applies even more so here. We're worried if she gives a ring, people are going to say, Shigam ha'ish yichola l'kadesh ha'ish. They'll say, I went to a chuppah, he gave her a ring, she gave him a ring. Clearly, this is how a Jewish wedding works. She can marry a man through a ring, or maybe you need both of them to give a ring. But Rav Moshe has a problem, because Chazal never said this. Chazal said about the lake and the water that you can't take a shower, but they never said if a woman gives a ring, people are going to say that this is how you do a kiddushin. So how does Rav Moshe get around the fact that, you know, he wants to introduce an idea that Chazal never said? The ein zeh mimele issur mamash. I agree, it's not an issur mamash. I can't tell you it's an issur drabonim. Because makom vaday zeh atzma she'oisin davar she'yochel aval zeh hu vaday inyan issur. It's an inyan issur. It's a little bit like what Rav Moshe says about time switches, about Shabbos clocks. We talked about this. Rav Moshe says, I think Shabbos clocks are completely prohibited. Why? Because Chazal introduced a din of Amir la'akum. You're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to turn things on for you, turn things off for you, leaving aside the whole Shabbos goy that they used to have in Eastern Europe. That was because it was freezing cold, and people were going to get sick and going to die, etc., if they didn't have the fire on. But under normal circumstances, you can't ask a non-Jew to turn things on and off. Says Rav Moshe, why can't you ask them? Because you'll turn Shabbat into a weekday. You'll just engineer, I'll go to work, I'll ask my secretary to type a lesson, to do this and to do that, and turn on the lights. Shabbat will just turn into a weekday. Says Rav Moshe, if Chazal would have known about time clocks, Shabbat clocks, they would have said the same thing. Amir la'akum, you can't have things turning on, turning off. Shabbat is going to turn into a weekday. Chazal never said it. They would have done, don't worry. If they'd have known, they would have said it. It's not an issa, it's an inyan issa. The same idea. Yeah, you had a question?
Can a woman give the man a ring without saying a bracha? Just give it to him?
He's not happy. He says if he gives the ruling under the chuppah, or if she says it, even after he's not happy, people are going to get the wrong end of the stick. So the first thing he says is, the kiddushin works, but I think it's a really bad idea for the woman to give a ring, because people are going to get, you see the chukat agoy, which is an issa daraisa potentially, or people are going to get the wrong end of the stick, and we see already that that's a problem for other places. In the next tshuva, he goes even further, and we'll see this is very, very interesting. He suggests actually her giving her the ring could undermine the whole kiddushin entirely. Look in number 7. He says, you still hear, Masha Katafti, the Kiddushin Shinata Aideh, our reformer rabbis. Kiddushin done by reform rabbis. She'ein l'chush len klal. Don't worry about it. It's not a Kiddushin, which, by the way, is very helpful, as Rav Moshe was quick to press, because when later, if the couple get divorced and do not go through a proper gittin procedure, and then she remarries, this is going to cause enormous trouble with Mamzerus. And therefore it's in our interest, for all sorts of reasons, and in their interest as well, to undermine the original Kiddushin. Says Rav Moshe, generally speaking, a reformed Kiddushin is not a Kiddushin at all. Kilavashe ein sham eidim kasherim. Leaving aside the fact that there probably aren't kosher eidim, male eidim, shomer Shabbos, because some things are non-negotiable. The eidim have to be male, I'm not going through all of the proofs for that, and there has to be a man marrying a woman. I mean, none of these things are buvan me'elav, okay? But the kohen has to be a man, the kala has to be a woman, and the eidim have to be men. Says Rav Moshe, if those things are not present, I mean, he's not talking about two men or two women, but the eidim have to be kosher, a shomer Shabbos. Therefore, most people don't do a real kiddushin in reform rings. Now, if he gives her a ring, says Rav Moshe, she might give him a ring as well. In fact, it's very often that happens. And the fact that they're exchanging gifts under the chuppah shows that that's what they think this is, an exchange of gifts. Maybe they think that the Kiddushin didn't need the rings. The Kiddushin just happened. Maybe they never even said, I do. Or maybe they said, I do. I don't think they say, I do at a reform wedding. But let's say they asked them, would you like to marry this man? Yes. Would you like to marry this woman? Yes. They think that's the Kiddushin. Now we're married. Baruch Hashem. Oh, so now let's exchange gifts. That's lovely. The loyshem is zeh mekudashim, zeh zeh, mekachim zeh zeh. Shenema, they're going to say, shenitna habal, we're not going to say that the baal gave the ring to the woman, but itina ta'isha shegam ken itina kiddushin hu divrei hevel. They won't think that. They will think that the real kiddushin was the exchange of vows. Dehem hem eina mekachim klal, ela haita tshuvas dvarim al shelet ha-rabbi. They'll think that answering the rabbi, he asked her, would you like to marry this woman? He says, yes. The oisa hushoyel, and the rabbi asked the woman, im he roitse she bala, you want this man to be your husband? And she says, yes. Shezeh einam av dvarim shel kiddushin. And that's not a kiddushin. And therefore says Rav Moshe, the problem with her giving him a ring is it actually makes them think that the kiddushin is nothing to do with the rings. And if that's the case, then he doesn't have the proper das to make a kiddushin at all. In which case, the whole thing might not work at all. Now, the question then begs the question, how much does a chotan actually have to know when he's standing under the chuppah about what exactly is going on? Rav Moshe is raising an interesting point, which is, if he thinks that a kiddushin is the state exchange of vows, then it's not a good kiddushin. Tell me, how many chassanim really know what's going on under the chuppah? Yeah? I once went to a chuppah, the chassan looked literally as though he was about to jump out of the window. Okay? The rabbi kept saying to him, say, Hari at mukudeshetli. And he kept saying, Hari ata mukudeshetli. He couldn't get the words out. He couldn't get the words out. By the way, the end of that story is not a happy one, but that's not for now. But how much does the chassan know? The chassan's standing there. Half the weddings the people do, the chassan's clueless, the kala's clueless. The rabbi knows, the edim know. And in fact, the Shalom Shuvers, the Oynig Yontem, I brought you at the bottom of number 8, says, look, for gittin, you really have to know. You really have to know what you're doing. That's why you don't put gittin in the hands of amateurs. But for kiddushin, where do we learn kiddushin from? We learn in Kicha Kicha Mitzvah Ephron. It's learned halachically from when Avram Avinu makes that first connection with Eretz Yisrael. It's a beautiful wedding of our Torah, that the kinyan that Avram makes with Eretz Yisrael is the kinyan, is the love affair that begins the Jewish people of Eretz Yisrael, the Chosn and the Kala, and halachically, at the beginning of Kiddushin, very well known, Chazal learned Kicha Kicha, uses the word Yikach Yikach, and therefore the same mechanism is used for Avram connecting with the field as the husband connecting with the wife. How much do you really need to know when you make a kinyan on the field? He says. You know, you gave the money, you signed the form, you walk around the field, you put up a fence. Do you know exactly at which point you make the kinyan? No, most people are clueless. Let me ask you, when you go and buy something in the supermarket, do you know when the kinyan is made halachically? Is it when the money is passed over? Is it when you lift it up and take it? Who cares? You bought it. You're happy. You bought it. So it's the same thing here. You don't need to know exactly when the Kiddushin happens. So what's Rav Moshe worried about? He knows that somewhere along the line, between beginning and end, they ended up getting married. And in fact, Rav Moshe, if you look over on number 9, he actually holds that, you know something, you're right, the Kiddushin really does work. Taka works. And he goes a little bit further even in number 9, and with this we'll finish this particular topic. He says the following. He says, Oysen harbi inshi, many people do the following. Dvarim shebadu ma'atma, things they made up themselves. Shigam hakala noitenis tabat lachos. This is a different shuv in 1980, towards the end of Rav Moshe's life. She gives a ring to the chos and tachas achupa v'shav kiddushin v'omeres gam kain eze davar she harbe rabbis ichnisuza. So there's rabbis that put new things in that she says the inyan mark the kiddushin. Some nice words about the kiddushin. The loy nikamim akadish lemi. It's not clear who is marrying whom. Im achasen et akala or akala et achasen. Who's marrying who? Ukishin is damin the rab echad. Now he says, but if you're the rabbi of the community and the Kala insists on a double ring ceremony, they force him. Oh, can you force your local rabbi to do things? You bet. Okay. For who? Anus. He is literally Anus. He is being forced. The Paranasato. If you don't do this wedding, rabbi, you'll be looking for a new job on Monday. Okay? And that's not such a made-up scenario. Lasot kiddushin. Dask, he can do the kiddushin. Says Rav Moshe, I'll allow you to do a double ring ceremony. I hate it. Either they'll like it. Chukat Agoy, it's a Doraita, but you can do it. Daske ba'adun shakala, titen gam kein tabad l'chatam, tarich lahodia otam. The Rav at least needs to make sure that they know, for gam l'ha'edim, and that the edim know, ki rak nesina tachosun la'akala hein kinyan l'kiddushin. That the only thing that makes the kiddushin is the chosun giving to the kala. And her giving him a ring is not part of the kiddushin klal. Elohu rak matana ba'alma va'amirasa tehei b'loshin shehem divrei nesina la'ahava hu lechiba. He says it quite nicely. He says le'ahava lechiba. He doesn't just say to shtus for hevel, okay? Achre shikvar hu ba'ala. She's already married and now she gives a ring. Now, it doesn't mean he endorses the double ring ceremony at all. He doesn't. But he says, if you have to, at least make sure that everybody knows what's going on. And the advice which is given to all kalas who want to give a ring to their chosan is, give a ring, but simcha, but do it after the chuppah. Don't do it in public. Don't do it with a tekets. You say some nice things to the chosan, but do it on your own. And that's what my son and daughter-in-law did. She gave him a ring later in the yichud room. I don't know what they said to each other. It's none of my business. But at the end of the day, he walks out wearing a ring. She walks out wearing a ring, but nothing else happened under the chuppah. Okay, so that's the advice which is given, and therefore a double ring ceremony is out of the question. Now, what about a woman making sheva brochas? Now, I've never seen this at a chuppah, but the question is, why not? What's the problem? Is there a halakhic problem with a woman standing up there and making sheva brochas at the chuppah? So let's move on to sheva brochas now. Look at number 10. Says the Gemara in Maseches Kala, Kala b'loy brocha asura l'bala kinina. Without, even though she may be betrothed to him, even though they are halachically man and wife from the Erusim, from the Kiddushin, from the Hari Atzma Kudeshetli, yes, they are man and wife, they may not be together, they are prohibited as just as if she was a Nida, until they make the Sheva Brachot. Man Nida Sheloi Tavla Asura Labala, just like a Nida who didn't go to the mikveh is prohibited to be with her husband, Afkala Beloi Bracha Asura Labala, so to Akala without the Sheva Brachot may not be with the husband. Where do we get this from? How do we know that even on a Torah level there is a hint to the brochas under the chuppah, the sheva brochas? Shneimar, v'yivarchu et Rivka. They gave Rivka a brocha. Who's the they? Laban and his merry men, they gave Rivka a bracha, v'yomru, and they said to her, achoseinu, at hiyela alfei rabava. This is a minhag that many people give, this bracha to the kala, okay? You should be like thousands and tens of thousands of Yirash Zareich et Shar. So no, fine. So they gave a bracha to her. This is the origin of the idea of Sheva brachas. And even if she's been married before, says the Gemara number 11 in Ksubas, I'm a Rav, Achas Pesula, Achas Almana. I don't care whether she's been married before, hasn't been married before, to Una bracha. She needs a bracha. Now, why? Why does she need a bracha? What is this bracha? What are these brachas that we're doing? And this is where I think it gets very interesting. Looking at the Beit Yosef. What is the nature of this bracha? So the Beit Yosef says in number 12 the following. He quotes the Torah. You make the Sheva brachas before she goes under the chuppah. Oh, what? Indeed. Now the question is, what is the chuppah? Chuppah is, what is chuppah? Chapui means covering. So you should know, this is not the shiur for today, but there are many different opinions as to what the chuppah, actually, what the word chuppah means. Could it be the bedekin, where he covers her face? Maybe that's part of the chuppah. Could it be the canopy that we colloquially call the chuppah? Could it be the talit that they place, the Ramah says, over their heads? And this was a Sephardi minhag, and my son and daughter did this under the chuppah. They put a talit over both of their heads for the Birkas Nisuin, a beautiful minhag. Could that be the chuppah? Could it be the yichud room? Maybe that is the chuppah. Maybe the wedding night is chuppah. So, first of all, before we get too excited about what chuppah is, realize chuppah could be very many things. But here he says, whatever chuppah is, you make the brachas before. The kekos of a Rambam, so too says the Rambam in Hilchas Ishus. And what is the reason? For hatam mavur shemishum, the kol mitzvah, all mitzvahs mevarech aleihem oydeleth yasam. When you do a mitzvah, you make a bracha beforehand. You don't shake a lulav and then afterwards says, oh yes, you don't do that. You always make the bracha before you do the mitzvah. The Haran, however, the Ram says, no. The minhag is not like that. The minhag is that we do the brachas after she comes to the chuppah. So you've got a machloikas here about what is the nature of these brachas. Are they a brachas on the mitzvah of getting married? In which case you make them before the chuppah. Or are these brachas not birkat ha-mitzvah? I think everybody in the room knows there are different kinds of brachas. Certain brachas are birkat ha-mitzvah. Asher kiddushan of mitzvah yitzah. Okay? And then you do the mitzvah. Some brachas are brachas of praise. You say, shehakol nihyeh bedvarah. That's a birkat ha-shevach. It's not on a mitzvah to eat a Mars bar. Okay? You say the bracha because you're saying, shehakol nihyeh bedvarah. Leaving aside Chalav Yisrael, I'm not talking about that. So the issue here is as follows. What is the nature of the Sheva brachas? Is it a birkas ha-mitzvah? Which mitzvah? Which mitzvah is it to get married? And who is the mitzvah upon? So really what seems to be happening here is this is the beginning of the mitzvah of Peru Ravu. And that's his mitzvah, not her mitzvah. So if these are birkas ha-mitzvah, someone is making these brachas to be moitzi, the chosen, in his mitzvah. If that's the case, we'll see in a minute, maybe that has to be a man. How can a woman who is not obligated in his mitzvah make the Sheva brachas to be moitzi the chosen? It's not her mitzvah. And generally speaking, that doesn't work. On the other hand, if it's a birkas ha-shevach, if it's a bracha of praise, maybe that will work because it's a bracha of praising the wedding, etc. And in fact, different Sheva brachas have different functions. Look at number 13 in Rashi. Shehakol bara lichvado. The first of the Sheva brachas, shehakol bara lichvado. Einu min ha-sedel. That's not really part of the Sheva brachas at all. Elal asifat ha'am ha-netzafin sham. Ligmul chesed. That brocha, shakol, baralich vador, is a brocha to bless the people. Thank you for coming. That's basically thank you all for coming to do this lovely chesed and help this chosan and kala get married. Zeichel achaste amokum. This is a reminder from when Hashem originally made the first chuppah, shenagim, Adam, harishon, shenasi, lo shushvin, v'nitasik bo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes, as it were, to the wedding of Adam and Chava. And this asifa, this gathering, is a praise for Hashem. It's in Hashem's honor. Therefore, really we should make this brocha apart from the Sheva brochas. It's nothing to do with the Sheva brochas. Nothing to do with the Chosam and Kala. Umishas asifa hi roi lebarich. Really we should make that brocha at the very beginning, not part of the Chosam and Kala at all. And in a cave and sheyesh brocha ala kais. But since we have a cup, let's put all the brochas together on the cup. A little bit like we do on Moshe Shabbat. You say Besamim. You say a bracha on the Ner. So it's got nothing to do with Havdalah. What's a Ner and Besamim got to do with Havdalah? Not connected at all. But now that we're making a whole tekes with a cup, with wine, with Havdalah, so let's put them all together. That's how it works. So two here. So you see from this, the different Sheva brachas have different functions, and they may not all be focused on the Chosan himself. Turn over to page 4. So there are really two ways of viewing this. But I'm afraid either way you view it, a woman is not going to be able to make the Sheva brachas. And I'll tell you why not. Because if you say that the Sheva brachas are to fulfill the mitzvah of the Chosan, then like I said before, which seems to be what the Rambam says if you forgot to make the Sheva brachas, there's so many things that can go wrong with a wedding, you know? And I was once sitting at a wedding where everything was going wrong. I mean, you name it. It was all going, the brachas out of order, they forgot this, they forgot that. There was a Talmud Chacham sitting next to me, he whispered in my ear, this is the kind of wedding that they write tshuvas about, and that's not good. Things can go wrong. I heard of a wedding once where they did that, everything's beautiful, you know, they made the brachas on the nisuin, they make the sheva brachas, they danced into the yichud room, and then someone realized, did he give her a ring? Oh, yeah. He never gave her the ring. And then you have all sorts of problems. Can you do the kiddushin after the nisuin, etc.? So much can go wrong. So the Rambam, if he forgot to say the brachas, the sheva brachas, no problem, he'll say them later. He'll make them later on, just between the two of them, whatever, or they get a little minion together. Clearly it's his mitzvah. If it's his mitzvah, then a woman can't make the brachas, because a woman is not able to be motzi a man, like in mitzvahs that she's not chayav in the same way. So that's not going to work. But what if it's the obligation of the community? So there already raises an interesting question, which I'm going to do quite quickly, because I want to move on to the next point, which is, how many people do you need in order to make sheva brachas? So you need a minion. You need 10. So is that a minion? Meaning, is that a minion like you need a minion for Kriyas HaTorah? Or is that a pirsume, not nisa, but a lafirsum minion? Meaning, you need also, or it's advisable to have 10 people to read the Megillah. But you don't need a minion to read the Megillah. You can read the Megillah on your own. So why do you need 10 people? It's not to make a classical minion, it's to make a public gathering. And therefore there's a debate here as to what's going on. If the minion for Sheva Brochas is a minion, like the Ritva says in number 16, minion Levirchas Chassanim Ba'asara, it's from the whole concept of minion. So then, forget about it. So the women can't make up the minion to make the Sheva Brochas, and the Sheva Brochas are because of the public gathering, so she can't make the Sheva Brochas. She's not making the community. On the other hand, if you say that the minion is there, not as a classical minion, but as 10 people, like as we said before, maybe women can make the 10 people to join for Kriyas HaMegillah, in order to say Haravis, Rivenu, etc. Because that's public, that's Lepirsum. And the Gemara says, the reason we have 10 people there is not just as a classical minion, but to publicize the mitzvah. Maybe women would be able to make that as well. Rabbi Vandra Paskins says, no. Look in 17 and 18. We'll see, we'll leave you with a little sophic. Rav Avadia says, Mavur ba Chidushi HaRitva, number 17, B'Shem HaTosfos, Deloi Choshiv Panim Chadoshes Ele Kashiba Adam Choshiv L'Sham. Interesting question, side question, but can a woman be Panim Chadoshes? Yeah, we have a Sheva Brochas. And you say, who here wasn't at the wedding to make the Sheva Brochas? And a young lady puts up her hand and says, I wasn't at the wedding. Is that okay? Can a woman be Panim Chadoshes? This is a very practical question. He says, the Rav Avadia says, I'm sorry, you need an Adam Choshev L'Sham. The Isha Lav Bat Hachihi. And a woman cannot make that minion, and then he adds very carefully, Afal Pi Shehi Chashuva. Don't get me wrong, he says, I'm not implying that men are Choshev, women are not Choshev. Chas v'shalom. She's Chashuva. But she doesn't make the minion. She'ein Panim Chadoshes Ela Mishu Hu Roy Limonet Ba'asara Shel Birkas Chassanim. He clearly says, it's a minion, guys, and it's a real minion. Therefore, we have to be able to make up a minion to be a Panim Chadoshes. And actually, I brought you in Rav David Albach, in number 18, this is the nephew of Rav Shlomo Zalman. We'll see more from him in a minute. He passes in Halichas Beis, which, by the way, is one of the best forum on women's halacha out there. Not Halichas Bas Yisrael, that's a different sefer, which has a different approach, but Halichas Beis of Rav David Albach, I highly recommend it. He paskins the following, in number 18. That a woman cannot be part of this minion. Is not able to make the Sheva Brochas. She can't be one of the Panim Chadoshes. But
He does. He quotes the Ritzvah, the Rabbi Avadi quotes it. But then he says at the end in the note, V'ulam, b'chidush e'chasm seifa, the chasm seifa says, the panim chadoshes sagi afilu be'ishav ha'kotten. That maybe a woman can be panim chadoshes. Kol shim marvim simcha. Anyone who brings extra simcha to the chasm, the kala, may, and he leaves it as a bit of a question in the footnote, can a woman, yes, be panim chadoshes or not be panim chadoshes, but he passes in the main body that they cannot be panim chadoshes. So a woman cannot make the sheva brachas under the chuppah. Again, either because it's a brichta mitzvah, it's his mitzvah, and a woman is not obligated in puruvu, she can't be moitzi the chosen because she's not obligated in the mitzvah, straight halacha. Or because it's a mitzvah on the community to praise, it's a brichta v'shevach, and she doesn't make up the minyan. Okay? Or if she does, because of pirsum, we pass because she can't be one of the panim kardoshes. So what can she do? So in a number of communities, a minhag has arisen that there's an eighth bracha. Doesn't they call it the eighth bracha? But it's not really an eighth bracha. That's a misnomer. In the Siddur of Rav Amram Gon, if you turn over to page 5, you'll see that after the Sheva Brachot, there is a beautiful little tefillah which Rav Amram Gon has. It's not an extra bracha. People call it the eighth bracha, and I think that's incorrect. But you can read it yourself. It's quite well known. Teyom Azev Yerushalayim, Yerubis Machot B'Yisrael, Yerubis Achotot B'Yisrael, Yerubis Besirot Tovot B'Yisrael, etc. It's a beautiful bracha. And there are weddings where a woman is called up to the chuppah to say these words of Divrei Bracha afterwards, and this certainly is accepted in a number of places. It feels a little bit different from the normal sort of chuppah system, and we'll talk about that in a minute, whether that feeling makes a difference. But that certainly is something that I've seen done. I have also seen that this bracha has been adapted to fit people's political agendas in different ways. You know, once you're already adding extra words, for example, the Rav Amram Gon talks very clearly about them having children and banim and banot, etc., etc. Some of the versions I found online just carefully left those out, so people want to put in what they want to put in. But I have seen this, and it doesn't have Shem or Malchus, and therefore some people do that. Now, what about making Sheva brachas at the meal? Can a woman make Sheva brachas at the meal? Has anyone ever been to a Sheva brachas where a woman made one of the Sheva brachas at the meal? You have, okay? One person out of a lot, okay? Two people. Okay. Is there any problem with this? Now, all of the things we talked about under the chuppah do not apply in the same way at the meal, because we're not making a birkas hamitzvah for the chosen to be moitzi the chosen. They already did that at the chuppah, okay? So what's going on here? So look at the Shulchan Aruch number 20. Mevarachim birkas chasanim bebeis chasanim, acha birkas hamazon. A new halacha, you make sheva brachas after benching. B'chol suda v'suda she'oif l'sham. Anytime you have a suda there, you make sheva brachas. The aim of arachim bracha zo lo avadim, the like katanim. Okay, and you can't. Avadim and katanim are not allowed to make the sheva brachas at the meal. Now that's very interesting. Avadim and katanim. There is often a third one that goes along with this, which is Nashim, Avanim, and Ketanim, and the Shulchan Aruch, quoting the Rambam, does not mention this. Why? Why not? So the Chelkas Mechaikik says very clear, in number 21, he says, because the whole point is the Zimun. The Avanim and the Ketanim cannot make a Zimun. That's why they can't make the Sheva Brachas, because Sheva Brachas are connected with the Zimun. Now, can women make a Zimun? Yes, they can make a Zimun. Look in number 22. So we'll first of all deal with the issue of, do you need a minyan? In order to make the Sheva Brachas, you need 10 males there, adult males. Okay, good, it's a given. The Chasam min a minyan, the Chasam counts as one of the 10. Bein kasha'im rimoisa b'shas nisuin, whether you're talking about the Sheva Brachas at the wedding, bein kasha'im rata'acha b'rikas amazon, or the Sheva Brachas after the meal. You need a minyan to make Sheva Brachas. What do you do if you don't have a minyan? Can you make the Sheva Brachas? No. But can you make any of them? Yes. About Kashe'ein Oimrim Acha Brikas Amazon Ela Brikas Asher Bara. But if all you're doing is the last, Asher Bara, starts from the Simcha, Chas from the Ka, yeah? If all the making is the last one, Ein Atzarech Asara. You don't need a minion for that bracha. You can make that bracha without a minion. Aloch on the Meister, you need a minion for all the Sheva Brachas, you don't need a minion for the last bracha. Says the Ramah, Mikol Makam Gimel Ba'inam. But you need a Zimun. You can't do it if it's just the Chos and Kala sitting with each other, having dinner with each other. So what do you do? If you have a minion, you make Sheva Brachas at the meal. If you don't have a minion, if you have a Zimun, you make Asher Bara. So what if you have a Zimun of women? there's the chosen sitting there with the kallah and 15 kallahs as friends of the kallah. You have 16 women and the chosen. Is there anything they can do for sheva brachos tesh? So, as we know, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins in number 23, Nashim Adamnos La'atman Rishus. If women are together and there are more than three of them, they can make a zimun if they want to. Avad kashe ochelet im anashim, if she's eating with men, chayavot, she has to make a zimun if there are three men there. If there are three men who make a zimun of men, the women are obligated. I've seen this often, sometimes the women don't realize this. They think, well, it's just a men's thing. No, if there are three men, the women have to wait for the zimun, unless they have a heter, like a man might have a heter, not to wait for the zimun, that's a different shear, but she can't just bench on her own and leave. So it's like a man can't just bench on his own and leave unless there's a reason why they can. But three women on their own are allowed to make a zimun, they just don't have to make a zimun. So I saw a very interesting tshuva of Rav Joel Wolowelski talks about this in his book, which I've mentioned at the bottom. And by the way, the OU website, which I quoted, I suppose I can't go wrong quoting the OU website in the OU Israel Center, raises the question on one of the shirim there, what if there are two men and three women? Can the women make a zimun, or do the men have to leave? What's going on here? So, the men do not have to leave. According to Rav David Auerbach, quoting his uncle Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and as I say, the Shir quotes Rav Eliashiv, who says the same thing, Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, that the men do not have to leave. The men can answer to the zimun. If there are three women making a zimun, and there are one or two men sitting there, that's called a good zimun, and the men can answer to the zimun. There are people who say the men should leave. I'm not aware of a source of why they should have to leave. And again, there are many eminent poskim there in that footnote who say that the men do not have to leave. And so comes along Rav David Auerbach and also Rav Yehuda Henkin, and I quoted you at the top of page 6 from the Shabbos and Shuvah's Pnei Bonim. So Rav Henkin says, so this is what they can do. If you have a sheva brachos without a minyan, with lots of women, the kallah and her friends, and the chosen sitting there, so the women can make a zimun, he can answer, and then the women can say Asher Barah. The women can say the bracha, the seven brachas of Asher Barah, and Rav Henkin quotes this, in the name of Rav Auerbach, as long as the women make the zimun, they can do that. Now, I've never seen this, and I'm sure people would feel that this was terribly avant-garde, or different ways, but it has a clear halachic basis. The question is not, can you do it? The question then becomes, should you do it? But that's one thing that, as I said, Rav Henkin certainly validates. But a woman making sheva brachas at a regular sheva brachas with a minyan, that there is basically nobody that permits that. Only this example of the three women and the Asher Barah. Okay, fine. Let's talk about something else because this is an important one. What about women reading the Ksuvah? What could be wrong with women reading the Ksuvah? At the end of the day, why do we read the Ksuvah? To make Aztec, because it used to be that the Kiddushin was 1 year, and the Nisuin was 12 months later, they made a Brei Pri Agafen there, so if you drink two glasses of wine a year apart, of course you make another Brei Pri Agafen, okay? But now we do them all together, so you make Brei Pri Agafen, you drank the wine, and now it's 10 minutes later, someone's going to make another Brei Pri Agafen, mother, they're standing under the chuppah, yes sir?
Why is the ketubah written Aramaic and not Hebrew?
Okay, good question. Okay, you can translate it into Hebrew if you like.
No, but why? Why Aramaic?
Because
some people don't know Aramaic.
Good. Some people don't know Hebrew either. But in many communities they read out a synopsis and etc. But the question is, like, the only reason we read the Ksuvah is to make this hefsek. You could read any number of things, you know, that's the minute to have a speech. In that point, to make the more of a hashtag you make, the better. So can a woman read the Ksuvah? So I brought you an extracted version of a very famous, that became quite infamous, Dvar Torah essay that Rav Schechter wrote about 15 years ago, and I didn't bring you the whole thing, but in number 25, let's just read a couple of lines from it. He says, a new trend is emerging among certain modern Orthodox circles. A scholarly woman is called upon at a wedding ceremony to read the Ksuvah. They say that, quote, halachically, there's nothing wrong with this. In a certain sense, the statement is correct. If one only judges the issue from the perspective of the laws of Siddur Kiddushin, there's nothing wrong. Strictly speaking, the reading of the Ksuvah is not at all part of the marriage ceremony the minute it was introduced, we just said, to make a hefsek, etc., etc. But then look in the second paragraph. But when a shaila is researched, one must look through the entire Shulchan Aruch and consider all the various aspects of the shaila. Just because there is an issue that doesn't appear in Evan Ha'ezer, Hilchas Kiddushin, or Hilchas Nisuin, it doesn't mean that the issue is, quote, non-halachic. Or a Chaim Hilchas Kriyas HaTorah is just as halachic as Evan Ha'ezer. Okay. In Hilchos Kriyas Atzeh, the Shulchan Aruch says that women are not called up for an aliyah, etc. And then Rav Shechter says the same is true regarding a woman reading a ksuba in public at a chasna. Of course the Kiddushin will not be affected in the slightest. No one disagrees on that. The truth of the matter is that no one has to read the ksuba at all. But nonetheless, it is a violation of... Now, he says some interesting things here that other people disagreed with. He said it's a violation of Kavod HaTzibur. Just like when a woman is called to an aliyah, technically speaking, you could say that that was permitted on a certain level, but Chazal said it's also because of Kavod HaTzibur. It's not a Kavod for the community to have a woman surrender her privacy to read the ksuba in public. Were there no men present who were able to read this Aramaic document? You can see already that he's starting to skate on slightly thin ice here. Clearly the motivation to have a woman read the ksuba is to make the following statement. The rabbis, or better yet, the God of the Jews, has been discriminating against women all these millennia and has cheated them out of their equal rights, and it's high time that this injustice be straightened out. What a silly misunderstanding, he says. Our God never intended to cheat women out of their rights and privileges. Quite the contrary, he wants to give women the ability to fulfill the halachta b'drachav in a more complete way without ever having to compromise their tzniut. Now, there's lots in there to talk about. And certainly, I'm not going to be the one who in any way engages in a conversation on that. But you could ask the question, is it a tzniut issue? And we'll see in a minute, Rav Henkin deals with that issue. What is the motivation of people? People are not all motivated in the same way. Some people are motivated X, some people are motivated Y. And we'll deal with that issue very specifically in just a moment. But Rav Shechter is clearly very against the idea of the women reading the ksuba. And this, I asked around a little bit. Certainly in the YU circles, they do not permit the women to read the ksuba. I asked a little bit in the Datanumi world, and I talked to the people in Migdal Oz. Migdal Oz is a very respected institution, a Bet Midrash for women on a very high level. They have women learning Torah day and night. And I spoke to some of the people involved there, and they do the Bracha of Rav Amramgon, yes, and give the Divrei Bracha under the Chuppah. A woman speaks maybe under the Chuppah, but they do not have a woman reading the Ksuba. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was asked, is it permitted for a woman to read a ksuba under the chuppah? And he said, it's 100% halachically permitted, but under no circumstances should you do it. Okay? And then because there are other circumstances that you have, like Rav Shechter brought in here, I don't know if they were his exact words, he said highly inadvisable, but that is not done. However, Rav Henkin, in the tshuva that I started bringing before, he was asked, can a woman make sheva brachas? And he said, no, woman can't make sheva brachas. And we said, why before? But he says very clearly that a woman can read the ksuba. And he suggests that this is something nice that you can ask a woman to do at the chuppah. He says maybe a woman could be the master of ceremonies. Maybe a woman can introduce the rabbonim. He says, I suggest you tell the rabbonim first that you're getting a woman to introduce them so that nobody has a heart attack on the spot. But he says there's no reason why, as far as he's concerned, a woman cannot read the ketubah. And he says, if you look in the left-hand column there, Hagam, on top of that line, Hagam shebamakim shenashim einam regilas ledaber bifnei tzibur. I agree. In a place where women do not normally speak in front of male crowds, I says, I'm not denying that. Sniut is a complicated thing. We had some shirim on sniut, and there's a lot of minag amokam and minag b'nois Yisrael. In a place where the women do not speak in front of men, I totally get it, he says. But in communities where the women are lecturers, the women give shiurim, the women are chief executives, they give TED Talks, etc. In a community setting, then what exactly is the Kavod HaTzibur and the Tzniut issue here? These women are in any way, in any circumstances, giving public addresses, which is quite acceptable to the Tzibur, and he says he feels that that shouldn't be something that women are prevented from doing. Although my understanding is, even though Rav Henkin says this is halakhically permitted, I don't think the Rabbanit Henkin is too keen on it, but you can ask her. I don't want to speak for her, and I didn't speak for her to her personally. And therefore, again, it's not a question of what you can do, it's a question of what you should do. And this question I just want to address for a minute before we finish in number 27. I've learned this tshuva before with you in detail. And this was shir number one. We're now on shir number 111. Okay? This was shir number one, which was Bat Mitzvah on this series. And the Sridei Eish has a tshuva about Bat Mitzvah. He says, is that mitzvah permitted or advisable? And he says that we never did it before. It was an innovation of the Reform community, and many people are viscerally against it. He says, but they're wrong. They're wrong, because not all innovation is wrong. Look at number 27. I want to see this with you, because this, I think, his word should be a guiding light in this whole issue as to not what is technically permitted, but what should we do. There are people who argue against it. It's against our minhag, which is a good question. Do we have a minhag not to make a bar mitzvah? Or do we just have no minhag at all? But he says, even if you say it's against the minhag, this is not an argument just to say it was not the minhag. The reason they didn't make a bar mitzvah is because the education of women was fundamentally different in previous generations. That's why they didn't make one. Ulamasa, in practice, hadava toliba kavanas haroitzim lechadesh. Why are people motivated to bring chidushim? That's the key point. The chadesh minagzeh, shel chagigas habav mitzvah. Im hei mitzkadim l'shem mitzvah, is there kavanah mamash l'shem mitzvah? Or chalila l'shem chikri haminim? Or is it just to be egalitarian, to have other agendas, other isms, other copying of other cultures? And I think that's the key point. And sometimes people claim, it's not fair, you don't ask other people, you never ask men what their motivation is, you're only asking the women. The answer is not true. Anyone who wants to come and be machadish, a new thing, the question is, why are you doing this? What is your underlying motivation? Is it good, which it may be? Is it bad, which it also could be? He says, I know full well, sheyesh bein ha-yirayim ha-asuri oisim ha-machmirim. There are many people who say this is also, and they're very machmish. She'enum samim leiv b'shelos shel minhagim datiim l'shikulim hegyonim. Because when it comes to minhag, people just don't think straight. They just viscerally react, and they say it's against the Masorah. V'ach'enum noitim dasim lebirurim hilchatim. They don't even need to listen to the halacha necessarily. El adanim aleim al pi rikshay taleiv bilvat. There's a lot of visceral reaction against innovation. He says, I know that. V'haleva yudi. Okay? Hadovek v'masoiris hayrim amoyim. Of course, we want to stick to the Masorah of our parents. Nirtanikol shino shehu b'nai gadati. Of course, we should be nervous about changing minhagim. Our minhagim are special, and there are reasons behind them. They're not shtuyot. There's enough people doing shtuyot elsewhere in the world. We have netzach, we have something which we connect to, which is infinite. Ulam ein lahem nishkoach. But people should never forget. Kigam hamitzdalim beheter shel minach chadash zeh, that the people who want to bring in this new minhag bat mitzvah shel chagigas bat mitzvah, libam dofek b'charada lechizuk hachinuch hadati shel b'nei Yisrael. They're not doing it to be feminist, he says. They're doing it because the girls really need it. The girls need the chizuk. The girls need the encouragement. The girls need to feel that they're not excluded and unwanted and delegitimized, etc. He says that you have to look at the full picture. I have to finish because we've got 2 minutes. And therefore, that's the complicated thing about this. If it's halakhically prohibited, okay, there's nothing to talk about. End of subject. If you can do it technically, the question is, should you? I think these words are very important because, you know, even though Rav Shechter correctly said that there are people with negative motivations, there are people with positive motivations, and it's not so straightforward. Let me just finish with one point, which I just want to make. I mentioned that the Kalal and Adar Chuppah made a Sheikh Yanu. Is there a problem with her making a Sheikh Yanu? So why does he make a Sheikh Yanu? On a talus. So Rav Avadia says, look at number 28. Ma she'ein mevarchin Sheikh Yanu al mitzvah zeh, mitzvah zah, gam b'loy talus kadasha. I don't get it, he says. The guy's getting married. He's receiving all these gifts. He's connecting with a beautiful new wife, building a new home. That's not a Sheikh Yanu. He needs to put on a talus. You know, the Rav Maimon, who was one of the signatories of the Declaration of Independence. So when they made the state of Medinat Yisrael, so he stood up and he said, Sheikhianu v'kimanu v'higyanu l'zman hazeh. So one of the other rabbonim there said, Sheikhianu, what's the hetzer for Sheikhianu? So he said, don't worry, I'm wearing a new jacket. So why do you need a talus? He says, no, there's good halachic reasons. You can't just make Sheikh Yanu whenever you feel happy. Oh, I feel very happy today, Sheikh Yanu v'kimanu v'kiyanu. You can't do that. It has to be Zman Kavur. There ain't mabarchin al mitzvah she'ein lo Zman Kavur. Yes, a new season, there's a new fruit season. Yeah, I bought a new suit because I wore out the old one. It's the beginning of a new era, the next suit era, etc. Oh, Baruch Hashem, Shehecheyanu. That's good. You can make a Shehecheyanu. And then he brings different days, one way or the other. He brings the Yaivetz who says, no, you can make a Shehecheyanu on the wedding. And if he can make a Shehecheyanu on the wedding, then she can make a Shehecheyanu on the wedding. But he says the minhag is that you have to have some kind of new piece of clothing, etc. So the truth is the Kala has plenty of new clothing she can be getting to peg the Shehecheyanu on as well, the dress and the furniture and all this. I just brought you at the end, the Rav Avadya brings here the Mari Chagiz, at the end of the first paragraph. He says, in the name of the Shadish and Shuvah Hilchus Ketana, She'adarabha, Ein Levarich Shehecheyanu, not only should they not make a Shehecheyanu, Adarabha Yesh Nishol Lama Loi Mevarich Dayan Ha'emet. He says, well, I'm not sure why he doesn't say Baruch Dayan Emes under the chuppah. Now, I can't work this out. I don't know whether this is rabbinic humor or whether this is really an analysis of the way some people feel under the chuppah. But either way, the Shehecheyanu, I think, you know, there's something in that way to pin it on, and the talis or the dress or whatever it is will work. I leave you to read number 29 on your own, second, which I think is some important final words from Rabbi Wolowelski, who talks about this. One thing I think that we have to be very careful about, and this I'll leave you with. You can innovate different things, and some of them are harmless, but some of them are just silly. And tokenism, just for the sake of it, can be very damaging. For example, I saw that the Kala walks around the chosen. Okay, beautiful, it's a minhag, not everybody has it, some people do it. So some people want to say, so no, the chosen should walk around the Kala. Or maybe they should both walk around together under the end. There comes a point when, come on. There's a reason that she's walking around him, and actually that reason may be based on a pasuk in Yirmiyahu about the feminine dominating the masculine. It actually undermines the whole concept of minhag, just to stand, make things up, and walk around chasing each other around an empty space, which is based on nothing at all. So as long as we make sure that we're not just in a token way bringing in new things without thinking them through, I think there's a lot to think about there. We'll leave it there. Next week we'll get back to the issue of Medrash and Halach. Thank you. Let me just stop this one second.